Good afternoon, and welcome to Vicor Corporation's conference call for the first quarter ended March 31st, 2016. I'm Jamie Sims, CFO, and with me here in Andover are Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO, and Dick Nagel, Chief Accounting Officer. Today, we issued a press release summarizing our financial results for the first quarter ended March 31st. The press release is available on the investor relations page of our website, www.vicorpower.com. We also have filed a Form 8-K with the Securities and Exchange Commission in association with issuing this press release. I remind listeners this conference call is being recorded and is the copyrighted property of Vicor Corporation. I also remind you various remarks we may make during this call may constitute forward-looking statements for purposes of the safe harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Our forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from those explicitly set forth or implied in our statements. Such risks and uncertainties are discussed in the Form 10-K we filed with the SEC on March 8th. Please note the information provided during this call is accurate only as of today, Tuesday, April 26th. Vicor undertakes no obligation to update any statements made during this call, and you should not rely upon such statements after the conclusion of the call. A replay of today's call will be available beginning at midnight tonight through May 11th, 2016. The replay number is 888-286-8010, and the passcode is 95049218. In addition, a webcast replay of today's call will be available shortly on the investor relations page of our website. I'll start this afternoon's conversation with a review of our financial performance for the first quarter, and Patrizio will follow with his comments, after which we will take your questions regarding our business. For the first quarter, as stated in this afternoon's press release, Vicor recorded a net loss per share of $0.14, representing a net loss of $5.35 million. For the fourth quarter, we reported a net loss per share of $0.05, which represented a net loss of $1.75 million. For the first quarter of 2015, we reported net income of $3.4 million, or $0.09 per diluted share, reflecting the relatively high volume contribution of VR12.5 shipments for data center applications that was not sustained through the year. As addressed in this afternoon's press release, the first quarter of 2016 reflected the circumstances we have described for the last few quarters in terms of the negative influence on our revenue and profitability of the combination of delayed uptake of our new products and general weakness of demand for our legacy products. We have a very scalable operating model, highly correlated with production volume and capacity utilization. Depending upon mix, our quarterly break-even revenue level falls within the low to mid $50 million range. The first quarter was much like the preceding quarter in that backlog entering the quarter implied insufficient production volume to be profitable, which informed our guidance for that quarter. However, the first quarter was characterized by an unanticipated further decline in turns volume, which is to say orders booked and shipped within the quarter. As stated during our February 25th call when we addressed fourth quarter and full year 2015 performance, our expectations for the first quarter of 2016 were largely based on booking patterns for the prior months and our forecast of the impact of the consolidation of our custom power operations from six locations to three. While the organizational transition of the custom consolidation has gone largely to plan, with a pause in bookings and shipments at year-end and early in the first quarter, the BBU experienced a broader decline in turns volume for the legacy module business, both domestically and internationally, attributable to worldwide macroeconomic uncertainty. Slightly lower Chinese activity was anticipated, but weakness in other geographies was not. One positive difference going from the fourth quarter to the first was the sequential stability of VI chip modules shipped. This stability reflects a trend of rising demand for VI chips. Despite the introduction of numerous additions to its family of SIP regulators, PICOR's revenue continues to be heavily dependent on the data center segment, and the sequential decline in revenue reflected delays in orders from that segment. Concluding on consolidated revenue, recognized distribution revenue for the first quarter also reflected global macro trends, declining approximately 8%. Our consolidated gross margin percentage for the quarter sequentially declined to 42.0% from 44.4%, reflecting lower production rates and poor capacity utilization. As I mentioned, VI chip volumes were steady, and while well under capacity, yielded a higher gross margin percentage for the quarter, rising sequentially. This is another data point in an encouraging trend of improved manufacturing results for VI chip, giving us confidence in our ability to meet forecast demand at targeted profitability. PICOR enjoys higher fabless product margins, but given its lower revenue for the quarter, was not a meaningful contributor to consolidated gross margin. Consolidated operating expenses declined sequentially $538,000 or 2.1%, reflecting expense categories linked to revenue, notably commissions and compensation. Advertising costs also declined, largely due to campaign timing. Total operating expenses sequentially declined, while other operating expenses, fixed and variable, were within forecast ranges, with the exception of legal fees, which were lower than forecast due to reduced litigation activity and the conclusion of the transactions associated with consolidation of our custom operations. Our consolidated operating loss of $5.4 million reflected the decline in revenue and product-level profitability. Unlike recent quarters, our first quarter tax calculations did not reflect unusual or non-recurring activity. Recall we recorded a tax benefit for the fourth quarter of $775,000, driven by the reversal of state-level tax reserves and the reversal of the sizable deferred tax liability associated with one of the two custom power transactions completed at the end of the fourth quarter. A similar deferred tax liability associated with the custom transaction completed at the end of the first quarter was substantially smaller, and its reversal did not meaningfully impact the calculation of our small tax provision recorded for the quarter. Due to the aforementioned custom power transactions, resulting in the elimination of the non-controlling interests associated with the two consolidated subsidiaries in which we held 49% ownership, our calculation of net income or loss attributable to VICOR Corporation, which is our true bottom line, will, going forward, only reflect a 7.5% minority interest held by a third party in VJCL, our fully consolidated Japanese subsidiary. Since the final custom power transaction closed at the end of the first quarter, our results for the period reflected an insignificant non-controlling interest amount associated with the subsidiary involved, which had ceased operations during the fourth quarter. Turning to cash flow and our cash position, our first quarter net loss, partially offset by a working capital decline and depreciation, drove a decline in our cash and equivalents of $3.3 million to $59.7 million. The balance sheet adjustments associated with the third and final custom power transaction contributed approximately $700,000 to this decline. Capital expenditures for the first quarter declined to $1.9 million from the prior quarter's $3.5 million, largely reflecting the fourth quarter completion of our new VIA manufacturing line. As we stated last quarter, we expect capital expenditures to remain at the current level for the next few quarters. The quality of our receivables portfolio remains excellent, with day sales rising to 45 days due to specific circumstances largely linked to the consolidation of our custom operations. Similarly, our aging schedule remains in very good shape. Annualized turnover of consolidated inventories declined slightly from 4.9 times to 4.7 times, reflecting the decline in revenue. No unusual or notable activity occurred in our inventory reserves. Employee headcount as of March 31st was 999, up 14 from year end. I'll now turn to our financial outlook for the second quarter of 2016. Bookings for the first quarter were characterized by weakness in legacy modules, reflecting the trends described earlier, somewhat offset by the anticipated recovery of custom bookings, which had declined substantially for the fourth quarter. Total BBU bookings fell overall approximately $600,000, or 1.6%. The encouraging news for the quarter was the resumption of purchase orders for our VTM and PRM solutions for powering processors using the Intel VR 12.5 standard. Reflecting these orders, VI Chip and PiCore saw quarterly bookings sequentially increase 28 and 85%, respectively. With this mix of bookings, our consolidated bookings increased 5.1%, our book-to-bill was 1-to-1, and our, 1-to-1.1, and our one-year backlog increased 7.7%. As Patricio will address in his remarks, we expect meaningful order volume for our VR13 data center solution to begin in the middle of the year for shipments starting in the second half of 2016. For the coming quarter, given our backlog and April booking activity, including an improvement in turns orders, we are forecasting improved performance driven by higher production volumes. I'll now turn the call over to Patricio.
Yes, so to Santiago said, the book-to-bill for the first quarter was 1.121.
Right.
Okay, thank you, Jamie. As Jamie addressed, Q1 results reflect the assumptions and expectations we communicated to you during a recent call regarding fourth quarter and full year results. He also spoke to the first quarter receipt of orders for our 48-volt PRM VTM data center solution, which is a resumption in demand for these products. These orders for solution meeting the Intel VR 12.5 standard represent the precursor of the anticipated shift to VR 13 solutions. When we last communicated on February 25th, I expressed to you my enthusiasm for Vigo's competitive position, affirming my confidence that our strategy, technology portfolio, and products are enabling us to lead the transformation of the industry. I will repeat what I stated then. Vigo is poised to lead the adoption of the high-performance solutions we've championed. Now I'm able to somewhat more freely and specifically address one of the reasons for my statements of enthusiasm and confidence, as we saw a series of high-profile public indications that Vigo has indeed positioned itself with the right products at the right time. On January 20th, in Santa Clara, California, at DesignCon 2016, Vigo participated in a panel discussion with representatives from Google and Intel, focusing on Google's adoption of and support for 48-volt motherboard architectures. This represented the first time Google explicitly acknowledged their use of a 48-volt architecture in their server farms. This public acknowledgement foreshadowed what was to be announced later in the quarter. On March 9th, at the Open Compute Project Summit in San Jose, Google announced its joining OCP by contributing a 48-volt server rack specification as a first step to drive adoption of a 48-volt architecture standard for power distribution in data centers. Google's adoption and advocacy of a 48-volt infrastructure for data centers validates the long-expected uptake of our superior solutions. Google, again, was explicit in its support of 48-volt architecture in the data center for the 30% improvement it achieved in power system efficiency. Google's statements also represented a tacit endorsement of our factorized power architecture for server boards, as Google emphasized the substantial saving achieved by direct conversion from the 48-volt bus to the low-voltage level of board processors. Another encouraging development coming out of the OCP summit was the emphasis placed on expansion of its telco project, which is focused on the application of OCP's data center solutions to communication systems, which have used 48 volt, the traditional distribution infrastructure, within switching stations and central offices. Numerous telco vendors and operators already familiar with 48 volt will now be exposed by the OCP to the density and efficiency advantages of factorized power systems in data center servers, while the data center community is drawn to the expanded market opportunity with intercommunications, given the transition of carriers to server-based solutions brought about by the convergence of cloud computing, rich content delivery, and mobile communications. At the IEEE Applied Power Electronics Conference in Long Beach, California, from March 20 through 24, 2016, Vicor's factorized power approach to 48-volt motherboards received a great deal of attention, in no small part because of the news coming out of the OCP summit. At the conclusion of APEC, the trade magazine E! Times published a review of what they saw as the top 10 new innovations, placing a factorized power system solution at the top of the list, stating, quote, Vicor has the best 48-volt direct-to-CPU in the industry. The marketplace momentum has continued into the current quarter, with announcement made at the Open Power Foundation Summit on April 5th through 8th in San Jose. While the OPC is an industry group led by Facebook to spur open development of a wide range of data center technologies, Open Power is an effort to create an alternative architecture to Intel's x86 based on IBM's power line of CPUs, which our components support with an even greater competitive advantage in conversion efficiency and density. At the conference, Google and Rackspace announced a joint effort to co-develop an open data center server architecture based on IBM's new Power9 CPU. Google said that, as with its 48-volt server for OCP, a 48-volt infrastructure fits the rack Google is contributing to the industry group. I encourage listeners to review the presentations we have posted on our website describing our 48-volt 2.0 load architecture. We have links on our Power blog page that will take you to some of the articles and presentations I've referenced, including the E-Times article identifying Vicor as the number one vendor in the 48-volt 2.0 load segment. I also invite listeners to seek out Google's OCP Summit presentations and management's comments, as you will see how Google is laying out the roadmap for widespread adoption of 48-volt server rack and motherboard solutions. You will also seek out the many articles published over the last few months providing confirmation of the 48-volt 2.0 load power distribution architecture and products that we have championed. My remarks so far have been focused on recent exciting developments in the data center segment for obvious reasons. However, Vicor is also engaged with our chip and VIA products in other markets, including aerospace, autonomous vehicles, LED lighting, and wireless infrastructure. In their respective spaces, these market opportunities are as significant as the data center segment. As stated in this afternoon's press release, our weak operating results belie the progress made toward fulfilling our strategic vision. Without providing specific guidance, I'm comfortable stating that I believe we're close to fulfilling our long-term vision. Demand for our point-of-load modules, accompanied by increasing demand for our front-end solutions, should soon enable growth in revenue and profitability. I'm sure listeners have questions, so I will open the call. Operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask an audio question, please key star 1 on your phone. If your question has been answered or you would like to withdraw your question, please key star 2. first question comes from the line of John Dillon. Please proceed.
Hey, guys.
Good afternoon.
Can you hear me okay? Yeah.
Yep.
Good. Okay, good.
A lot better than the operator.
Good, good. Yeah, the operator was going quiet there.
Yeah.
So in the press release, you stated that the purchase orders for the 48-volt solution meeting Intel's VR 12.5 standards have resumed. Can you elaborate on that? I mean, do you see a big uptake to where we were last year at this time, or is it going to just kind of creep up? Or, you know, can you give us a little bit more color on what that means for bookings this quarter?
So they've resumed to substantial levels. I think we have to take a wait and see attitude with respect to the progression during the year. Obviously, you know, progress with availability of next generation solutions will, at a point in time in the not least the future, bring about a crossover from demand, ongoing demand for the older generation solutions to new solutions. And that crossover may be influenced by the availability of different capabilities within the general Intel VR13 product portfolio. So we have to see what will happen over the next few quarters. I think what can be safely stated is that the inventory situation that had caused a void in demand has been addressed. There have been fresh new orders, and we expect that this is a trend that will bridge the gap toward the VR13, which I think, as you've heard from past conference call, will also bring about expanded opportunities involving greater penetration with existing customers and additional customers.
Sure, makes sense. So with this increase or the resumption of bookings for the VR12s, I mean, would you expect your bookings to ramp this quarter now, Q2? Are we going to see a slight increase in bookings, modest or a steep ramp in bookings for the quarter?
We expect to see bookings take positive steps this quarter, next quarter, and the quarter after that. So as far as the eye can see, at this point, we have you know, visibility to a steady progression of increasing bookings and shipments.
So you think it would be a modest increase this quarter then, or?
I'm not going to get too specific with respect to how modest or immodest a particular quarter improvement might be. I think so far, and we're only less than 1 month within the quarter, you know, we've seen an early positive development with respect to the forecast booking trend. So the actual orders that come in are consistent and support the forecast that we made in terms of the progression for this quarter and the balance of the year.
Okay, great, great. All right, and in regard to the bookings ramping and the positive trends that you see, we've talked about the 3x5 plan, and I know it's been set back, but I'm just wondering, when do we expect it to really to start to ramp? Is this the beginning of the 3x5 plan, or is it a quarter away, or do you have any color on that?
Well, unfortunately, that's something we've been talking about for way too long, and, you know, I feel, frankly, hesitant to comment, and I don't want to jinx it in any way, but I do believe that we're on our way to achieving that goal, and that's what was meant by the comments in the prepared remarks regarding achieving our long-term strategic vision. I do believe that, you know, the level of activity that has been escalating in a very exciting way, in particular over the last 6 months, foreshadows a significant growth ahead for us in not just the center market space, but as suggested in the earlier remarks, in a multiplicity of end markets with a growing list of marquee customers.
Excellent. So you also talked about all the OCP announcements and all the different announcements, and obviously that's very positive for you. But I'm wondering, can you give us a little bit more color? I mean, are you getting new customer inquiries because of this? Are you seeing more data centers come in and ask you for this? Are the phones ringing off the hook? Are they not ringing off the hook?
We
use speaker phones.
That's right. The phones are not exactly ringing off the hook, but we have seen a significant step up in interest, particularly within, certain related, players within that market segment. So as suggested a moment ago in answer to your earlier question, people of Vigor at large have seen over the last year, and it's been an escalating trend, increasing activity. It's really week after week, escalating activity with more and more customers seeking out solutions that are uniquely able to address their density, efficiency, and other power system requirements in a multiplicity of end markets, specifically in connection with recent announcements, in particular by Google. That's brought about significant incremental interest within the related market segments, and that would be encompassing not just the center market per se, but also somewhat related customers in communications, in the communication space. So that's something that has made a noticeable change for the better, we believe, and have seen, at least in some instances, in direct correlation with the recent announcements. But to be clear, the level of escalating activity across the broader front was already in place, and it was reflected in comments I made in past conference calls, late last year, even before these recent announcements were made. So I think the recent announcements have added some additional momentum in a particular end market or a couple of end markets that are somewhat closely related in terms of their opportunities.
Okay, great. I'll get back in the queue, but if no one else asks a question, if you could hang on for a minute, I'll get back on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jim Bartlett. Please proceed.
Yes, could you help me understand why was it to Google's advantage to share their 48-volt data center solutions with other vendors?
Well, I'm not in a position to answer that question. To the extent that I have visibility, I can't really use it to comment on this.
Okay. But regardless, that it would be a positive force in getting others to adopt the technology, but just within Google, they also announced some very substantial increases in new data centers. Could you help us understand how that new data centers, how that flows through to the benefit of Vicor?
Well, the only comment I can make regarding that is one that would reflect what's been publicly disclosed, which is that they are, you know, having had a year of conservative investment in CapEx and infrastructure, and I think that's a matter of public record, they are now ready to resume significant incremental investment in the infrastructure for you know, all of the opportunities, you know, cloud computing and all the opportunities that they have targeted. And so that's a fact that's in the public domain. And what's also in the public domain is Google's commitment and sponsorship of a 48-volt infrastructure, with respect to which, you know, as they've stated, they played, I think these were not their words, but I think it's fair to say they played a leading role in advancing state-of-the-art in a way that leads to a significantly reduced cost of ownership that is brought about by the reduction in power consumption, power dissipation that is present in efficient data centers. So the metric that was claimed by Google quantified the improvements at the level of 30%. I think it's not a mystery that given the large consumption of electricity in the growing number of data centers around the globe, a 30% reduction in unnecessary waste of electricity is a big deal, not just from the ecological green perspective, but also in terms of you know, the bottom line and in terms of the cost of electricity. So this is something that Google, again, for reasons that I can comment about, has recently decided to share with the world at large through Open Compute. And I think it will make for a better infrastructure by a multiplicity of companies around the globe.
Okay, let me ask you, with in the forecast of a profitable second half, you mentioned two things. You mentioned one is your anticipated rebound of the legacy business, as well as the opportunities and the new products on. And help me understand the anticipated a rebound in the legacy business. Why does that happen in the second half?
Well, that started to happening. We've seen that recently, and we see some improvement in the defense space. There's been improvement, as suggested earlier, with some of traditional bricks and some of the custom solutions that have been part and parcel of the legacy business. But to be clear, the growth opportunity is not going to come from those kind of older generation, lower density, lower efficiency, mm-hmm. higher cost per watt products. The opportunity going forward is largely dependent on design wins using VIA products, in particular when it comes to the space in which Vicor has traditionally played. Vias that incorporate chips of various kinds, in other kinds of modular and system products that we've been introducing at an accelerating pace over the last year, year and a half. You know, at the end of the day, there's really not a lot of mystery or magic to this. It's the products. You got to have the products. And then, you know, given the nature of the industry, because there is no instantaneous reward, there's a gestation period to the designing, and unfortunately it's a cycle that typically lasts 9, 12, 18 months, depending, in some instances even longer than that, depending on the type of application. But, you know, again, there's no mystery. Better products lead to design wins, and design wins lead to bookings, and bookings lead to revenues, and they lead to profits. Yeah, and Jamie's writing it down, right? It's as simple as that.
Okay, and profits in the second half, which are turning profitable in the second half.
Yeah. Just to manage expectations, this is not going to be a year of wild profitability. Don't get me wrong.
No, I understand.
I think that. We are on the right course, I think with a bit more patience as we get to 2017 and beyond, we should see finally return on, you know, the very large investment we made in via chip technology in particular. Just to set things in perspective, I'm sure some of you remember some of this data. We are invested to the tune of nearly $300 million in the technology and the product portfolio. And as I said in the past, we believe we're going to see a return on that investment. It's going to be a substantial return over time.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Don McKenna. Please proceed.
Hi, guys. Bear with me. I've got a little bit of laryngitis here, but I wanted to ask you, again, going back to the new IBM chips, what have you, and you identifying that you're the number one solution, if you will, vendor for that 48-volt solution. I take that to also say that you're not the only source for a 48-volt solution. So my question to you is, if I read that right, what percentage of the market do you expect you might get, and can you quantify the size of that market opportunity?
Well, so the market opportunity, as we can infer from the earlier comments, is expanding, and it may be expanding at a more rapid pace over the next few years, in part because of Google's decision to share their advances in terms of establishing a 48-volt architecture in the data center. Regarding share, I can't be specific with respect to that, but I can tell you that, you know, as noted by EE Times, which is an authority in the electronic space and well-informed with respect to assessing relative capabilities, you know, our solution is far superior to anything else that is either out there or claimed to be coming. And fundamentally, based on our visibility, we think we hold something like a 4x, four times advantage in terms of density, an advantage in terms of efficiency, an advantage in terms of other key attributes of, you know, a point-of-load power system with factorized power components that we've been continuing to improve and evolve to continually increase performance, you know, as a relevant metric that we share with our customers. We've been able to reduce losses at the pace of around 20-30% every few years, and that's a trend that is continuing. It's a trend that it's not just meaningful in terms of the implied improvements in efficiency, but related to it, improvements in the density of the solution, because as our density increases, our efficiency increases, our density increases with it. And last but not least, our cost structure goes down also in direct proportion to the reduction in loss, because we can make the solution smaller and the smaller solution costs less money. So I think it's something that everybody, every fair observer on the, in the industry would recognize today. You know, we have a formidable advantage, which is not accidental. It's a reflection of the major investment we made over a time frame of 10 years plus, major both in terms of dollars, intellectual property, and a lot of sweat by all the people of Vigor.
But is that market opportunity one of 50 million or 100 million a year, or can you?
It's a far, far, far larger market opportunity. I think just in the sector space, it's an order of magnitude greater than that. And guess what? The attributes that set our parser system solution apart from anything else in the data center space, those same attributes, not surprisingly, lead to commensurate advantages in other end markets. Because the issues are fundamentally always the same, and our methodology for addressing those issues is very scalable. So the issues, irrespective of the end market, are the same. You know, an ideal converter system is one that takes up no space, generates no heat, and costs no money. And fundamentally, you know, every customer would like to have that ideal power system. And to the extent that our solutions are far closer to that ideal objective than anything else, those advantages play out as well in other end markets. I'll give you a specific example. We've been talking for quite some time. I'm sure you've heard us make reference to the automotive space. You know, within the last year, we made remarkable advances in that general area. We actually now have some initial significant, you know, production business coming our way from China. We made advances, you know, around the globe with respect to components that enable, you know, a variety of, you know, automotive systems to be denser, smaller, more efficient, and more cost-effective. And so in one way of looking at it, it's replay of the same issues that have, you know, served us well in the center server space. And I could keep on going. It's not just automotive. It's other end markets. Because, again, the issues are the same. And our methodology is very scalable, because our tagline has been modular solutions to, you know, power system requirements, and inherent in the concept of providing modular solutions, which are in effect a Lego approach to power systems, is a level of scalability in terms of you know, being able to reconfigure the Lego blocks as need be to address different power system requirements. That is really unique in the industry. So it's not just that we have, you know, much better technology, you know, much better power conversion engines, superior power distribution architectures that are proprietary to Vigor, but we also have leveraged the engines, the building blocks, the architectures in ways that are very scalable and reusable, enabling, in effect, the same type of building blocks to be applied with corresponding advantages in very different end markets, where the nature of the products is totally different, but the challenges for the power system tend to be always the same.
Thank you. I wanted to also ask you, on, you mentioned the bookings would be positive quarter to quarter going forward. Could I expect that to be equal to or greater than the book-to-bill ratio that we saw this quarter?
I think we expect something in that general ballpark, that's the plan for the foreseeable future.
Great. And, Jamie, can you, on the headcount that you gave us, can you break that down for direct labor?
Not off the top of my head, but what I can tell you is that two elements of that shift were associated with, one, the custom power transactions, and then also an increase in temporary people in the plant.
Okay.
So it wasn't there. If you were to look at the individual categories, there wasn't a pronounced move in anything.
Right. Thank you. I'll get back in line as well.
Your next question comes from the line of Alan Hicks. Please proceed.
Alan, are you there?
Check your handset to ensure you're not on mute. Your next question comes from the line of John Dillon. Please proceed.
Hey, Jamie, that last statement, you have an increase in temporary people in the plant. Why would you need increased temporary people when your revenue wasn't up that much?
Because we didn't want to hire full-time.
So, okay. No, I guess I'm just kind of surprised you wouldn't be able to meet the demand with the current staff that you had. You know, are you bringing these people on because you're expecting the demand to go up more next quarter and you have to train them, or do they just come right in and just go? I mean, I would
really
imagine there's a training.
It really has to do with mix and steps we had taken in prior quarters.
Okay.
That's about all I'm prepared to say.
Okay. All right. Patrizio, you said that the via line was complete, and so now you're ready. So can you give us just a little bit more color? I know you've had some of this, but can you give us a little more color about how the via bookings, sales, and design wins are going?
They're going well. We have significant design wins and the growing base of customers evaluating various products in via packages. The via PFM in particular has been very popular. Via DCMs were introduced somewhat more recently, but they're also getting traction. Also bus converters in via packages. So we have a number of via products in a variety of end markets that are progressing from the curiosity stage to the designing stage. In some cases, actual design wins that are going to start ramping later this year.
So do you see a significant increase in the via line coming then? I mean,
that's why, we made the investment. There was a significant,
right.
Investment in an automated line to have the capacity we expect we're going to need as the year progresses.
Yeah, and you said that sometimes the design cycle's not quite as long on the via products. So, are you seeing bookings now for the via line, or are they starting to ramp up?
I don't have the specifics with respect to that, but I can generally tell you that I'm informed that we have a growing level of activity, and and you know, I stand by the earlier comments that you're referencing, which are that because of the nature of the VIA product, which is in effect a complete solution, it's a modular solution, as I was suggesting earlier, but in a package format that lends itself to literally getting bolted down to a chassis, getting wired up, and getting a power system going without further ado, which is quite different from, let's say, the designing cycle for the point of load PLM, VTM type of products that we're referencing earlier, which, you know, a very long gestation period because they require the customer or customers to, you know, to go through, you know, extensive design and qualification. And so the time to market for those tends to be a lot longer than what is in effect a turnkey solution, which is what VIA products provide. They're effectively, in a typical instance, a complete front end that the customer can purchase and use to power up the rest of their system.
Great, great. You talked a little bit about VR13 bookings. Do you still expect those to start this quarter?
Well, so I think that, as suggested earlier, we expect a transition to take place this year. I think we need to be a little careful with respect to which VR13, because there may be more than one SKU, and it could be that SQ gets turned on before what was to be the SQ that was originally anticipated to be in production, you know, in a time frame that, unfortunately for that SQ, has moved to the right considerably. So, to phrase it in somewhat different words, from the visibility we have, VR13 is coming, and the meaning of VR13 is not a proposition of a particular solution. It may well entail two different kinds of solutions at least.
Okay. And when the VR13s start, is that when you're also going to start getting some memory rails orders, or are those already coming in?
We have design wins that involve memory rails, we're getting more traction with more customers that are looking to provide a more complete solution using factorized power components. So the evolution of this has been starting with the main rail or rails of a processor or processors on a motherboard, which are the most demanding current loads, which logically represent, you know, the greatest opportunity for a solution such as ours that is, you know, denser, more dynamically capable, and better performing. And not surprisingly, you know, customers have initially focused on what you might call the lowest hanging fruit, which is, you know, the processor. But, you know, as they picked, you know, those cherries and found them to their liking, we see more and more customers, you know, climbing the tree with the, you know, memory rails or other lower power rails. And that's part of the opportunity in terms of increasing the content and the value that we have on motherboards.
And do you expect those memory rail bookings to start this quarter, or are they going to be next quarter, or will they be in tandem with when the VR13 bookings start?
So to be clear, the resumption of demand for VR12.5, that is devoid of memory rails. and the progress we made that involves memory rails at you know, some accounts, that progress is tied to VR13 types of solutions,
right,
that, you know, are not yet ready for mass production.
Well, that would make sense because they're designing a new computer, so they would design the rails when they're designing the VR13 solution. So that makes,
yeah,
that makes sense to me. Yeah, okay. And with the VR13, are we really waiting for, is it Purley? Is that the name of the version that is really going to be the huge step up? Or are you going to see you know, revenue from VR13 before that is announced or before that's released?
I'm not going to be specific with respect to that. I think there's some level of uncertainty, and I think it's safe to say that we're going to see a proliferation of opportunities as VR13 solutions for you know, the class of applications that we're discussing. These are not you know, mobile applications,
right, server,
for data center type of use or supercomputers. That's another application in which we've had success. So those tend to be the more advanced you know, SKUs. And unfortunately, the ones that are later coming.
Right. And what about flash and X-point memory? Are you seeing any design wins in those areas?
Well, so again, we're making progress with respect to addressing, you know, all of the loads, and there is a natural progression with respect to this. And to some extent, it's a function of the particular end market. So in certain end markets that are less cost sensitive and more demanding in terms of performance, we've had you know, earlier uptake. But ultimately, the nature of our building blocks and their continuing evolution and continuing improvements in performance and cost effectiveness, you know, make them suitable for very broad use. Fundamentally, we will have the ability to provide very cost-effective, extremely high-performance solutions, you know, ranging from 10 amps, 10, 20 amps, all the way up to hundreds of amperes for, you know, very demanding applications. And that covers a good deal of the landscape of the loads that represent most of the dollar value on a typical board.
Well, it sounds good. It sounds like we're pretty close, and I appreciate everything you've done. So thank you very much.
Thank you. If there is one more question. If not, thank you all, and we'll be talking in June.
Your next question comes from the line of Dick Soldernan. Please proceed.
My question has to do with, in your press release, you mentioned progress in the front end as one of the things for your optimism. Is that only the VIA, or are there other front end initiatives that you have?
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect and have a great day.